Okay. Good evening. Well, I'm really off center, aren't I? That's ironic for this class. I should really be in the middle. Can't talk about the middle of the road when you're off center. Okay. Congratulations on those who have been here for every class. You've gone through the first perek of the Rambam's Hilchot Deot with proper, well, with a good amount of contemplation and thought. And I was very, very fortunate to be able to go through it with you. And I am very greatly honored and thankful for all of you who have gone through it with me. Thank you, sweet one. Okay. Therefore, what I'd like to do tonight, we'll have a break next week, and then we'll come back, and I'll do the Arba Banim. We'll do a shiur on the Arba Banim before the four sons and the Haggadah, before Pesach. What I want to do tonight is I want to look at the entire perek as an overview. And the reason I want to do that is because it helps to, first of all, when we dive in to try and understand details, we sometimes lose the forest for the trees. And so I want to be able to come back out again and to be able to look at the perek as the Rambam put it out, to be able to see the whole vision of the perek. And I think that that also helps us solidify and weigh in, right, within what it is that the perek is saying. And then at the end, I will just give a few words on what the next perek is going to be. Please God, we are going to continue the shiur here at the LSJS. So the second perek and the second season will carry on here at the LSJS. But we will send out information as far as that's concerned. Baruch ata Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehiyah b'dvaroch. All right. So do we have the text of the first perek? Everybody's got that? Okay, very good. So I don't have a paper. I just need a paper, yeah, just so that I know where everybody is. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so let's take a quick look at it. We're going to look at it at its structure first. Let's look first of all at what we have here, and then we're going to look at the structure. What is the Rambam doing? So let's take a look at Halakha Aleph, right, on the first Halakha. If you have a pen or a pencil or some sort of writing implement, I would like you to do the following. Okay? If you look down, you don't have to do it. I'm just saying it's worth doing. If you take a look here on the page, like right in the middle of the first paragraph of that Aleph paragraph, if you're looking at the Hebrew, it says, Shehaguf tzarich lahem. Those are the first three words on the line. Really right in the middle there. You see that?
Yes.
Okay? I want you to put a vertical line after lahem. A vertical line after lahem. Okay? It's over here. Look. It's right about here. Okay? It's right about here. Shehaguf tzarich lahem. In the English, I'll find it for you in the English. Give me a second. Yeah. It's also near the middle. In the English, it's with the little that the body needs. You see that? Put a little line there after needs. Okay. The next line that I want you to do in the Hebrew is about a third of the way from the bottom of the paragraph. The first word on the line is tzorko. With a full stop. Sorko with a full stop. It's right over here. Sorko with a full stop where my thumb is. Okay? On the English, at the English, it is what they lack. Okay? Okay. The reason I've asked you to do that, pay close attention, this is important. Everything is important, but I'm going to flag the times you have to pay close attention. What I've just asked you to do is to separate that halakha in the way that the Rambam himself wrote it. We know how he wrote it. We have a book, we have more than one, but we have one famous manuscript of the Mishneh Torah, at least Sefer HaMada, which is what we're reading from. in which at the back of the book, in the Rambam's own writing, he says, Sefer ze muga misifri, which means this book has been checked against my own, and it's accurate. That's the point of him writing that. He writes Moshe ben Maimon, he signs his name. So we know the accuracy of this book. The reason why I'm saying that is because we know that the Rambam wrote out his halachot, meaning he broke the paragraphs down differently than we traditionally have them. The reason why we traditionally have them otherwise is because the most famous edition up until recently of the Rambam was the Vilna edition. The edition that was printed in Vilna. And the edition that was printed in Vilna did not maintain the sensitivity to the Rambam's separation of halachot. I don't know, I'm not a scholar. From here is where my scholarship ends. I don't know why. I would like to believe they just didn't have it. And so they had to deal with it however what they did. And they separated the halachot as they saw fit. Which now that we have, after the Cairo Geniza and after a lot of stuff that we've discovered along across time, we have the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. Not only how he wrote it, the words that he used, which incidentally, the Vilna edition is a terrible, terrible, it's filled with mistakes. It's filled with mistakes. And I say that knowing that it sounds very bad, but it is very bad. The mistakes are very serious mistakes. There are certain situations, literally, where one letter makes all the difference in the understanding of a halakha, completely redefines what it is that the Rambam is writing and trying to put out. Literally, one vav makes all the difference in the world, and there's many more severe mistakes than that. I never use it anymore. Personally, that's my personal, yeah. The only time that I open it is to see what the mistakes were and to check the mistakes against what we know was written in the Rambam's either his own hand or the hand of his students who copied his books, and he signed them and authorized them saying, this is my. So this is one of the things. This halakha is really three halachot. The Rambam wrote it in three sections, right? That's why this is one of the Rambams that I use, one of them. I use this one because you can see it visually, they graphically separate them. You see, 1, 2, 3 paragraphs, that's the first halakha. And so the way that I know it, because everybody uses the Vilna edition, they say Aleph 1 with a footnote 1 or a little sub, yeah? Aleph 1, Aleph 2, and Aleph 3. Yeah? But this is the way the Rambam wrote the halachot. If you have the Frankel edition of the Rambam, right, which is a newer edition, relatively, they write it with the Vilna separation, right, the Vilna halachot, but they have two dots in the middle of the halakha so that you know this is where the Rambam stopped it, or where the Rambam... It's essential in studying the Rambam because you obviously put a paragraph in somewhere for a reason. So that's what we're going to look at it this way, in the best way that we can with the circumstance that we have. I don't know. I said my scholarship ends there, so I have to be... I don't want to answer something that I'm embarrassed to talk about because I don't know. Okay. This first halakha, the Rambam is talking to us about attributes, right? So we know that he's talking to us about what we call de'ot. Yeah, so we define de'ot in the first shiur. Yeah, went through detail. Who can help me with that? What did we say the de'ot were? Anybody? I'm going to ask for participation. What?
Living.
Sorry?
Natural law.
What does that mean, natural law? I want you to explain for the room.
The way you conduct your life.
The way you conduct your life. So that's the word de'ot, or this is the halachot, the general halachot of de'ot, you're saying?
Yes.
No, that wasn't a yes or no question. I'm asking for an answer. You're saying that is the definition of the word de'ot, or that's what these halachot deal with? Okay, so that's what I thought. Yes, okay, lovely. So that's what I thought you were saying. I'm asking, what is the definition of the word? How did we define the word de'ot? Yes?
Well, you said it came from the Hebrew word da'at.
I did.
To do with intuition.
Okay, so it has to do with knowledge, perhaps intuition on some level, yes?
I was going to say the same thing, either innate knowledge or thinking.
Okay, it's interesting. Intuition and innate knowledge. So could I would say, thank you, I would say that it's precisely not that. It's not intuition and innate knowledge. It may be informed through intuition and innate knowledge, but remember that intuition and innate knowledge comes from within. It's not always very sensitive, although sometimes intuition is, right? It's not necessarily sensitive to what's without, what's outside of me. The whole nature of Da'at connects to what's outside of me. My ability to be able to recognize what isn't me, what I am within, and how I am interacting with something else. The age, remember we talked about the age of Da'at, right? The age of Da'at is puberty. Or the ability to be able to, when we say that somebody has Da'at or doesn't have Da'at, we're not talking about them having knowledge per se most of the time. We're saying that they have the capacity to sense reality. That they have the capacity to be able to be aware of the reality within which they live and interact. That's Da'at. And so when I talk about my attributes as de'ot, the way that I'm looking at them are not just my conditions of being, but my conditions of acting within a world. How do I interact with the world? The things, the tools, the modes within with which I use to interact with my world, the Rambam is calling de'ot, because they are my capacity, they are what I use to be able to interact and have interface with the world. Yeah? Why is the word knowledge da'at? Because it's a type of knowledge that I receive or I take in from interaction and experience. And yes, connection. Right? My capacity to connect with something also is involved in my da'at. If I'm only in my own head, only aware of my own reality, I don't have da'at. When I'm sensitive to the other, when I am able to speak in terms of another, when I'm able to act with care to another, that's da'at. But it's not just to another, it's to a circumstance, right? It's to a reality within which I find myself. Yeah, so that's the first thing. That was just the definition of the word. That's what we mean when we're talking about ilchot de'ot. Another way of talking about de'ot in another perspective is calling them midot. And the Rambam does call them midot sometimes, not here. Because his goal here is this. His goal here is interaction in the world and life. And ultimately, God. Right? To be able to interact in God's world and connect to God. Midot literally means measures. But you can understand how that would manifest here if you've gone through the halachot with me, because everything is about the measure, my measure of a particular attribute, and how it is that I use it.
I had this in my notes.
Yes.
And I didn't ask it last time, but I need to ask it. Is Da'at also streetwise?
Street smarts?
Street, yeah.
Yeah.
An element of that?
Sure there is. Yeah. Of course there is. There's all levels of elements in that. Of course there is. Of course there is. Because it has a tremendous amount to do with knowing your circumstance. As a matter of fact, the problem with academic smarts is that they lack da'at. It's wonderful to sit and talk about things as much as you want in a classroom or in a university, but the minute that you put somebody into a real situation, they better know how to deal with the situation. If they don't have da'at, they could have as much chokhmah and as much binah. But if they don't have da'at, they just don't know how to use the knowledge that they have. Street smarts is where the tires hit the pavement. So yes.
Would it include emotional intelligence as well?
Of course it would. Because it has to do with empathy and the ability to be able to know what somebody else is feeling. It could be instinctive, but yes, ultimately it is learned. Because one needs to be able to identify what another person is feeling. I mean, listen, this is something, I certainly have experienced this in my own life, but I imagine if we're at all sensitive, we've experienced it in our lives, in where I would need to experience something in order to be able to identify that thing in someone else. I will need to have experienced the hurt of love being broken in order to be able to really understand what it means for someone else to be experiencing that. Otherwise, I can have sympathy for someone, say, listen, I'm sorry that you're feeling badly, can I help you with anything, can you want to go to shopping or whatever. But it's not me actually having the emotional intelligence to be able to know you, what you're feeling, to be able to connect to what it is that you're having. But I know that through experience. It's through my interaction with a world and the experience of life that I have the capacity to know. It's the way that I know love as well and so many other things. Yes. This is going to be the last question until we move on, yeah? What about it?
Could it be something connected to that as well?
It has absolutely has connection to Derech Eretz, because Derech Eretz has to do with my understanding of my world and how people interact. This is the most basic element of being able to interact with the world once I have consciousness. I'm sorry, that has to be the last one. I have to move on because we're a very sensitive time. All right? So the first thing that the Rambam does over here is simply say, we have Deot. Human beings are replete with Deot. And he says that he opens with Deot Harbeh. There's many of them. There's a whole bunch of them. Every single human being has them, and they are a vast array of types and kinds. There's all these different complexities of human beings. We're complex beings. And we're complex because we have so many different aspects to ourselves. We're happy, sad, joyful, melancholy, whatever the case. I mean, you know, those two things that mean the same thing. But by the end of the day, basically what we're talking about is we are multifaceted people. We have all different kinds of acting and being, and we're complex. That's all he's saying. He's just stating something. He's not telling us what to do yet. All he's doing is saying, I'm going to tell you what to do later. But in order for me to tell you what to do and how we're commanded, I need to talk to you about the situation, the reality. The reality is human beings have de'ot. They have many de'ot. They have many diverse de'ot. That's his opening statement. He gives examples in the first paragraph. When I say first paragraph, I mean the Rambam's first paragraph, not our first paragraph. The examples that he gives in the first paragraph are three. Who can tell me what they are? Take a look. Look at it. Tell me what they are. Anger, pride, and greed. Interesting. The translations, what do we do? You always lose something in translation. There is ka'as, anger, ga'ava, which is arrogance, and ta'ava, which is desire. Right? Ta'ava is the desire for physical pleasures. He ends the paragraph there. He says there's ranges, right? There's ranges of these things. Some people have very high levels of anger. Some people have no anger. Once in a few years. Some people have very high levels of arrogance. Some people have like their doormats. Some people have very high levels of desire. Some people don't even have what they need to, you know, for themselves in their lives. He ends the paragraph there. The strange thing is the next paragraph just gives more examples. What are the examples of the second paragraph? Yesh baal nefesh rechava. What are we talking about here? There's only one thing.
Greed.
Well, it's interesting. It's not so much greed.
Sorry, can you say it again? Where is it? Greedy person.
Yeah, I know. That's the definition. But what is the greedy person looking for?
Oh, money.
Right. So why is that different than the last thing that we said, that the person has desire? It's different. What we're talking about over here is not a person that's greedy. We're talking about a person that has insatiable ambition. Meaning they need to constantly achieve. And that's why he brings money in. Because if I want to have a lot, if it's just a thing, there's a limit to how much I could have. I mean, okay, so I love steak. I love honey. I love whatever it is that I love. I love sweets. There's only so much that I can have of it. I mean, it's just, at the end of the day, there's a limit. But nonetheless, he brings this line, right? Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. But a person who loves money never gets enough of it. Why does the person never get enough of money? We said it. Because money's potential. Money's not a thing. And so nobody ever has enough potential. It's always just the potential for acquisition. And I can't ever get enough of that. The more I have, the more I want. If I've got issues, right? So it's not the wanting of a particular thing. This has to do with the ambition itself. That's why it's rehava. Rehava means a very widespread net of the one of this person's soul, so to speak. Yeah? They want to expand themselves as far as they can in the world. They want to be emperors. They want to have full empires. They want to be able to expand their holdings as far as they possibly can. Yeah? That's what that is. Why is that put into a separate paragraph? What's the difference between that and the previous three things?
The ambition is the means,
right? Yes. One is what's inside us. The second paragraph extends to where I want, what I want to do with myself. Where do I want to expand myself? Yeah? It's where I'm extending myself in my life. The third paragraph is yet another thing. And what is that? Still an example. These are just examples. But he's separating these into three paragraphs because there are different types of deot. Right? What's the third example? Property. What I have. Either I am starving and I don't have my food, the basic foods that I need, or I have just way too much of it, far more than I need. Whatever it is, it's all ownership of things, right? How much do I have and look to acquire? Some people don't look to acquire anything, not even the basic things that they need, and some people look to acquire everything, whatever it is that they can get their hands on. They're like, you know, collectors. I love that. Then he says, "Kach kol ha'deot." You can take these templates and put it to every last thing that you have. But there's three basic things. There's the stuff that's inside. There's what ultimately I want to get and what I have, right? What I own. Yeah, how far I want to extend myself and what is that I actually take into myself. That's it. You could do this with everything else. That's the end of the first section. In other words, the Aleph of the Vilna edition. The reason why Vilna put Bet in the next thing is because, okay, now we're moving on, right? What are we moving on to in the second thing? So the first thing is, the Rambam says, there are many attributes. They're quite diverse. Every single human being has them. There's three basic elements, right? There's the internal, there's how it is that I expand and extend myself, and what it is that I take into my possession. They're all basic ideas. And then you can just apply that template to everything else. And there is, this is the way it is. Now, what does number two deal with? The ranges. He's already said that we have them. We have them in these modes. There are ranges. And that's a major thing. See how he's building? You already know how it ends. But you see now where the Rambam's going, how his structure works. Because the whole thing is going to be about the range, isn't it? It's going to be about finding a place within the range. So he says you should understand that this is not on or off. It's not either this or that. We live within ranges of these things. There are ends, extremes, he says. And there are points between those extremes that are ranges. So again, is he telling us to do anything? He's just defining terms. He's just setting out points that we need in order to be able to get to the end of this, when he's actually going to tell us to do something. Right? Or he's saying, look, there are ranges. And we all have these things. And very importantly, what he does in number two is, these things come to us in many different ways. And he doesn't care how. He's saying, don't tell me that I was born this way, I grew up this way. Regardless of where it is that you got it, you can get it from a whole number of ways. As a matter of fact, he delineates, he counts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different ways that a person may have certain tendencies, attributes, particular natures to themselves. He says, oh, you should know, like, this is the way to do it, this is the way it happens. You could be a certain way, act a certain way, or any number of reasons. You could be born that way, you could be grow up in a particular situation, you could be habituated, that you just got used to doing it, you got into a habit, you've actually proactively went out to try and get yourself to act in a certain way because you find it to be a good way to act, whatever the case may be. Doesn't matter, we can change, says the Rambam. We can change because there are ranges. There's ranges. So he's not saying that a person should necessarily stop being human. What he's saying is that a person should find a point within the range of human behavior that is viable. So he says, right? The assumption of number one and number two, why are you telling this to me, Rambam? Why are you telling me about our attributes? And why are you telling me about these ranges? And why are you telling me about where people lie and how they get and so on and so forth? Why is he telling this to us? You can already anticipate that the opening of the thing that he's going to talk to us about addressing them, managing them. He begins that in the third paragraph. Okay? And this, as far as the Rambam is concerned, he separates them this way as well. Right? I'll tell you when he separates them differently. Okay? Third paragraph. The Rambam's talking about what is the best way to live. Now, very important over here, is he telling us this is how we have to live? He's not talking about Torah over here, or commandment, or mitzvah. He's just saying, look, it's worth finding equilibrium. Okay, let's take a look. What does he say? He says, "Shnei k'tzavot rechokot zo mizo b'chol de'abedea enan derech tova." Don't live on the edge. Either side, neither extreme is good. It's not a good way to live. So he's giving us advice. He's giving us advice over here. It's not a good way to live. En ra'ui lo. Notice the language over here. En ra'ui lo means it's not fitting for a person to live in these extremes. It's not a human thing to do. You can't be a good human being, a functional human being, and live in these extremes. He's talking about logistics. En ra'ui lo la'adam lalechet b'hem, ve'lo l'lamedan asmo, you shouldn't learn them. Imatza tiv'o. Look at the language. If you find your nature to be in one of these places of extreme, or mukhan ha'hamem, or predisposed to one of them, is what mukhan literally means. Or shekvar lamar, you're already stuck in one of them, because you've habituated, right? You've got yourself into it. Yachzir atzmo l'mutav, get yourself into a better way. It's like we will say in English, I'm in a bad way. You know, people don't say that very much anymore, but it's a term. I'm in a bad way. Get in a good way. Yeah? Yerech bederech hatuvim vederech yishra, you should get yourself into a good way. This is advice. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Why? You don't want to be on an extreme. You can't function at an extreme. Because the extreme is controlling your life. And you know, you want to find equilibrium. Okay? Advice. Telling you, there are ranges, and I'm going to tell you something about the ranges. Don't live on the extremes. That's all he's doing here. Yeah?
So if all of us are different, we're all going to have different extremes.
Correct.
And the middle path is not the same middle path.
Ah, and have we asked that question? Yes, we have. But it's a good question, right? It's going to make it more difficult even. Because what the Rambam is going to say, as you'll see, is that you have to find the perfect equidistant point from each of the extremes. Which is very strange. Let's look at Dalet. Do you want to separate Dalet with me? Very quickly. Okay.
I don't understand the word range.
Range. Do I speak your language? No, what language do you speak?
Range.
Oh.
Range for me means...
Means what?
Is in order to get to the middle...
Yes.
I have to travel.
Correct.
So it is a physical travel.
Well, we're borrowing the term. Because range doesn't only mean physical range. Range means there is a spectrum. You know what spectrum? Right? There's a spectrum of behavior. So I can be extremely angry... I can be not angry at all. I could be slightly angry. I could be kind of upset, actually more than kind of, but not, you know, in rage. Yeah? That's a range. Okay? How do I get there is a different question. The Rambam's not telling me anything about how.
That's what I want.
I'm sure everybody wants to find that out. Right? But he's keeping you on a cliffhanger. All he's saying is that there is this. He's not telling you how to find it out. But I'm glad that you do. That means that you should stick around. Right? So at the end of the day, what we have over here in Halakha Dalet, which you see is quite long. You see Halakha Dalet goes to the next page. Yeah? The Rambam separates Dalet into really four different paragraphs. The fourth is both Dalet and Hey, he puts it into. So the first paragraph ends at the word on the next page, right? It words three lines up, three lines down from the top. Last word on the line is Shalem, which will be whole, right? Here it says whole in body, but that's inaccurate. It's just whole, okay, in English. Yes? The next word is Ketzad with a question mark. Do you see?
Yeah.
Okay. You want to go down to Pam Acheret, which is 1, 2, 3, 4 lines from Ketzad. You see Acheret? Full stop?
Yeah.
You're going to do a vertical line after acheret. Yeah, in the English, it is recurring before similarly. Then you're going to go vechen until derech hachamim. Derech hachamim is the second to last line of that paragraph, in the middle, full stop. You see, he derech hachamim, yeah? In that paragraph, down to the bottom of the paragraph, second to last line of the paragraph, middle of the line, v'hi derech hachachamim, vertical line after hachamim. In the English, of the wise.
What was the one immediately previous?
Previous was Pamacheret. Yeah? Okay. That's the Rambam's paragraphs. So what does he do over here? First thing he says is, now he starts telling us what's good. Until now, he's simply been telling us what is the situation of the human condition. He's now beginning to say, if you want to be a functional human being, find equilibrium. So let's look. The first paragraph. Ader chayshira himida benonit. We're trying to find a middle path. Shebichol de'avedea, with every single attribute. We want to find middle. Mikol de'ot. Via de'ashi, what is the middle attribute? This is how he defines it, and this is the difficult part. He says, the middle attribute is, ha'de'ashi rechoka mishne ha'ketzavot richuk shaveh. It is the point that is equidistant between each extreme. It's perfectly in the middle. Yeah, go find it. How is one supposed to find perfectly in the middle anger, perfectly in the middle, pride, and so on and so forth? So obviously he's not talking about an actual way that we act within these acts, right? And we're going to see that he doesn't, but how did we define this? This was like the core of the entire series. So you better tell me what this was. How did we define it? Why did we define it that way? What happens if I'm on a scale, right? And I've got two ends. What happens when I find myself perfectly balanced in the middle? What happens?
Stay still.
It's still. It's straight. I'm not tilting on either way, which means that I am not under the weight of either one of the extremes. I emerge because it's tranquil and balanced. And therefore, I stand. I am not weighted down by the extremes of my attributes and behaviors, of my anger, of my pride, of my coldness, of my fervor, whatever, what have you. The middle that is perfectly equidistant is essentially figurative. In what sense? It's figurative in the sense that if I'm talking about a scale here, I mean, everything's being borrowed here, right? Everything's borrowed. I mean, what is an extreme? An extreme is just a behavior. I only know that it's an extreme because I'm judging it against something else. That's how I have a sense of an extreme at all. So it's all borrowed, right? I understand that my best analogy for two different things that seem to be very different from one another is extreme sides. So when I talk about the perfect equidistant middle, I can't find that in terms of actual behavior of any particular attribute. What I'm talking about is the point in where I find equilibrium. And the point that I find equilibrium is the point that I am in control. And I am not being dragged either way by the attribute. One of the examples that we gave with this was riding a bicycle, right? When I first start to ride a bicycle, I am constantly at odds with gravity. And the gravity is pulling me on either side. And I constantly try to compensate and correct for whatever side is moving by moving the wheel, right? The front wheel, so that I maintain equilibrium. But there comes a point in where I actually achieve equilibrium. And it's the craziest thing. It looks like I'm riding on wheels. Perfectly straight up. Which, you know, I mean, based on norm, I mean, you think about this for a minute. Think about what it looked like before bicycles were invented, when suddenly you saw somebody riding on this newfangled thing called a bicycle. What do you think it looked like to people?
Attempted suicide.
Maybe.
It's magical.
Impossible.
It looks magical. How are these people balancing on two thin wheels and riding across without any problem? We take it for granted. There's blockage. You can't see that. If you've never seen that before, you've never seen anybody do that before, it looks like magic. There's no way that that person should be able to be sitting on this little seat and these two wheels and riding through. It's the way we would look at somebody riding a unicycle. Well, right? You wonder, that's in a circus. You know, the bicycles, everybody's out in the street on these things. The unicycle's in the circus. That we're ready to watch. Okay, the bicycle should have been in the circus too at the beginning. Why am I saying this? Because there comes a point in where we genuinely are able to be right up at center against all odds, against anything that we would perceive. That's equilibrium. That can be achieved in a person's life with regards to person's attributes. He doesn't say how yet.
That also means, if I understand you, that I think the question about whether the equilibrium is the same for everybody, it doesn't have to be the same for everybody, because one person's equilibrium can be slightly different from somebody else's.
That's fine. You're talking about center of gravity. Right, so center of gravity depends on the particular individual, absolutely, which is why later on he will say kefi koho, based on your capacity to do so. So you may have a very different bicycle that you're riding than somebody else. The bottom line is that you've got to find equilibrium. And what does that mean? What is same for everyone is that for everyone there will be a point in which they emerge and they are in control. That's it.
That will be different.
That may very well be, but it will be the same in the sense that this person is not weighed down under there. Yeah? Okay. The next paragraph is a perfect place for a next paragraph to start. He says, drum roll please, Ketzad! But this Ketzad is not what we were hoping for, right? This Ketzad is not here's how you do it. This Ketzad in Halakha very often, certainly in the Rambam, is what do I mean? So the Rambam now is defining, he's further elaborating on what he just said to define what it is that he just said. Because all he says is, you have to be perfectly in the middle. What do I mean? Ketzad. What I mean is, don't be a bal chema noach lichos. You shouldn't be easily angered, and you shouldn't be impossible to be riled up. You shouldn't see the suffering of children and not be angry. You shouldn't see injustices in the world and not get angry. But you shouldn't get angry at the fact that somebody stepped on your foot by accident or that somebody parked in your parking spot or whatever the case may be. Know how to calibrate it. He does this over and over, right? Lo yichos al davar gadol. Chen, lo yitaveh. Now he takes each attribute. Also, with regards to your desire, it shouldn't be in a situation where you don't want anything. It shouldn't be in a situation where you have to have everything and so on and so forth. What does that look like? Again, how do I know? I know because the only thing that is left for me is what's required by a situation. If you're telling me, don't get angry this way, and don't get angry that way, or don't not get angry, basically what you're saying is, well, when should I get angry? He says, well, davar gadol, on a very big thing you should get angry. So what does that mean? It means that I have to recognize the davar gadol. I have to recognize a very serious situation. I have to be able to recognize what it means, what I require in order to be able to get angry. And I have to respond. What the Rambam is saying is, one must live in a way where the attributes are used as responses to necessity or requirement. And the only way that that can happen is if you're at the top of a bicycle riding with equilibrium. You turn the wheel as you need to go. Not as you need to correct for gravity. Yes? I mean, if we're using the analogy, forgive me for using it to death, but it's a good analogy. Okay, so once I have equilibrium, I can turn the wheel. If I need to go right, I turn the wheel right. If I need to go left, I turn the wheel left. If I need to be able to, hunker down to get up the hill, I hunker down to get up the hill. I do as what the situation requires. But the only way I can do that is if I don't have to worry about the equilibrium. Otherwise, I will only be turning the wheel in terms of maintaining the equilibrium, keeping myself in check. And you know what is going to happen? It's going to be too hard. And the bottom line is, I'm going to fall off that bike one day or another. That's why it's called it falling off the wagon. You know, you're just not going to be able to maintain it. And we all have that experience on whatever level we have that experience. And we really don't like being, you know, falling off the bike. Or we rationalize why I fell off and, you know, stupid bike and stupid floor and stupid everything, whatever. It's all never my fault. It's everything else's fault. But it's the bottom line.
Rabbi.
Yes.
But who decides where the equilibrium lies?
It's not so much who decides where the equilibrium lies. The question that you should be asking, forgive me for being so bold, is how do I know what's required? Equilibrium is just what is. If you are in control of your attributes, that's equilibrium. That's it. That's equilibrium. It's equilibrium for everyone. How, whatever it requires for any particular individual to be in control of their attributes, that's equilibrium. That's the definition. Because otherwise, the alternative is you're being tilted. Right? Are you?
I don't.
Sorry?
I have not.
You hope not, right? But you understand what what I'm saying. So, however it works for whoever it is, could be that, you know, like I said, the bicycles might be very, very different for people, and it's true. That's why the Rambam opens. He says some people have predispositions to one thing, predispositions to another, tendencies one way, tendencies another way, born into certain situations. People we read last time, we read when we were looking at this. People literally are genetically predisposed to anger, genetically predisposed to calm, to stress, to whatever the case may be. Everybody's got a different bike. Equilibrium means finding where you are in control. That's it. That's what it is, for whoever it is. Yeah? So, and being able to respond. Yeah?
I mean, from my place, I'm wondering, to add to that, sort of to explain it, isn't it through practice...
Wait, you're jumping.
Okay. All right.
Because we didn't say anything like that yet.
Okay.
We didn't ask how we're supposed to do it.
Okay, but that feels like the missing part of the navigation.
Yes, but we haven't finished the chapter.
Okay. And then if we go back a bit...
Because he hasn't told us yet how to ride the bike. He just says this is what it looks like.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so you can disagree with how the Rambam set up the parrot, but that's why. Yeah, go ahead.
And so... The other part... I mean, I guess I'm a psychotherapist, so I'm coming from that place.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if the conditions that... he's referring to also the early childhood conditions, and that's what we're talking about.
It's part of what we're talking about, of course. He includes that. He says how a person grew up. Right? Yes.
The Rambam have children.
Yes. Okay. So.
What, in his opinion, can women have equilibrium?
Every human being. In his opinion, women can be prophets. And if a woman can be prophet, she can have equilibrium. She better, right? She needs to.
I'm not trying to be...
I know what you're not. I know.
What?
I'm telling you. I'm telling you. I know what you're going to say. You know that I know that you know that you're...
He said, did he say somewhere
yes.
that women and slaves, shouldn't learn anything? And even
but I don't want to cross lines, because that's pulling a detail out of a major context that is inappropriate to look at without the context. But it has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
That's fair enough.
Okay, thank you. So... what we move to at the last line, and this is interesting because Vilna put this line in Dalit, right? In the Rambam, this is the beginning of another paragraph where he says, Kol Adam, right? You have a vertical line between Hachamim and Kol Adam,
yeah?
Okay, but before that, he says, what's the last words of that paragraph? Derech Zohi Derech HaChamim. So he's told us that we need to find equilibrium, a middle path, he calls it. That is called the way of the Chachamim. Yeah? He starts a new paragraph and he says, by the way, and you can understand why Vilna included this last line in the previous halacha. It says, any person whose de'ot are all, meaning the entire person, right? The whole person, the integrity of the entire person finds a place in where you don't find this person living outside the middle road. They are in control. That's a hacham, says the Rambam. Okay, but you just told me in the last thing that's Derech HaChachamim. I mean, if that's the way of the HaChachamim, why tell me as a HaChacham? Interestingly, the Rambam adds another line into this one paragraph. So take a look. You see in your pages, Kol Adam Shedeotav Kulan Deot Ben Yom Mitzvot Nikra HaChacham. The next line is Mishu Medakdek Al Atzmo Beyoter Vitrachek Meda Ben Yom Mitzvot Nikra Hasid. Those two lines are one paragraph. From Kol Adam until Hasid is one paragraph. Connect them. They're supposed to be connected. And all the Rambam is doing is he's using one paragraph to segue. He said that what I just mentioned, this middle of the road thing, that's the way of the Hachamim. Any person, however, he said something more than he said up until now. Any person who manages to create themselves into a situation, to put themselves, right, to fashion their attributes to a point in where they are always essentially in control and not losing themselves on either end, on any of their attributes, that's what we call a hacham. They're always riding the bike at equilibrium, they're able to turn the wheel as they need to, right? Going right, left, and so on and so forth. Yeah? He says, there is another element here, and he does this beautifully. In this one paragraph, two lines, he sets a split. He says, now, let's talk about the person that is at equilibrium, but is so much now in control that they are able to go to the next level of riding this bike. And that is that this person can maneuver the bike, not just maintain the equilibrium and ride to where they need to go. This person can maneuver the bike, tilt the bike on the spectrum as he or she wishes or needs to. Yeah? That's called a hasid, not a hacham. The difference between the hacham and the hasid, the hacham is in control and responds as necessary. The hasid is in control and anticipates and is proactive, does what he wishes. Now, it's not just what he wishes as a wild, person. It's as he wishes in terms of what he knows about the world and what he would like to enhance and augment and embellish out of his love for the world and God. That's a hasid, right? We spent an entire shiur talking about the hasid, okay? That's the next paragraph. And here already, Rabbi Zarum, I asked him then to separate the paragraph. You see, he's already done it for you. See, hey, 1, 2, 3, that's the Rambam's three paragraphs that talk about the Hasid. Really, I mean, there's really only one paragraph that talks about the Hasid. And that's hey, 2. What Vilna did was put this all into one halakha. But it shouldn't be in one halakha. The one halakha, which is hey, 2, or 5-2, is the one paragraph about the Hasid. And what the Rambam says about the Hasid is, the Hasid moves himself at will. Sometimes towards one extreme, sometimes towards another extreme, because there are times where perfect equilibrium don't cut it. I can run with my bike and I can make it past, but there are times where we need to have special ops in situations that require special behaviors. There are times where extremes are necessary, or at least movements towards extremes are necessary. The problem is, I'll answer your question in one moment, the problem is that we can't do that until we've already mastered the ability to ride the bike in the first place. Once we've mastered the ability to ride my life in equilibrium, and that I am emergent, and that I am in control, then I can begin to consider doing tricks. Riding without holding on to the bars, doing wheelies, tilting the bike and riding on a side, instead of riding straight up, whatever the case may be, right? And it may not just be for show. More often than not, if I'm a Hasid, I am anticipating God's world. I'm looking at God's hints in a world. And I'm responding in kind. I'm not just responding to what's going on or what's being presented to me. I'm acting as a partner with God rather than just responsive. And I'm thinking about what would make God happy, so to speak. So I'm not waiting for him to tell me. I'm listening to him. I'm being very careful about sensing what is real and what is viable and what I can do to be able to enhance that in my life and connect to God. We do this in love. And that's why the Hasid is always related to love. Always. The Chacham is not necessarily engaged in love. The Chacham is caring, connected, disciplined, responsive, dependent, meaning you can depend on him, right? The Hasid is loving. So he's got all the stuff of the Chacham plus. He goes the extra mile. I'll answer questions in a moment. Let me just get the thought out so that we can see this clearly. The Hasid is the person in the relationship that doesn't need you to tell them everything every single minute. This happens between men and women all the time, right? I mean, this is just the dialogue that goes on. You don't expect me to be a prophet. How am I supposed to know what you want? And yet, the other person is upset that you don't know. Yeah, but the problem is that if there is genuine communication, and there could be breakdowns in this because the person could expect you to know something that just is unreasonable for you to know. But there are situations in where if you're paying attention and you're listening and you love, and therefore the things that this person cares about, I care about, even though on my own I wouldn't necessarily care about them, but because you care about them, I care about them, I pay attention and I respond in kind. That's a Hasid. And the Hasid is always anticipating. And therefore, there are times where the Hasid needs to step out of line. What we would call lifnim mishurat adin, right? It's not just the perfect rule all the time. Sometimes you have to bend the rules in certain situations. I know it sounds crazy, but anybody who knows what I'm talking about knows what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about it in an inappropriate way. There are times in where the book and the letter of the law doesn't apply. As a matter of fact, I don't have this here on the sheets, but there's a beautiful Gemara that says the reason why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed was because they went by the book. They judged only according to what was written, and they didn't think to move from the letter of the law. Lo danu lifni mishurat adin. They didn't judge lifni mishurat adin. They didn't judge sometimes needing to veer from what was written specifically or how they needed to address specifically, because the situation was unique. The situation was not textbook. And the only one who can do that is a Hasid. You can't just say, okay, I'm not going into the textbook and I'm not following the letter of the law. You don't even know how to ride a bike. I mean, what do you mean? How are you supposed to not, I mean, first, you have to be able to be an expert at riding the bike. You're an expert at riding the bike. Okay, so then you can do the tricks that are necessary in order to be able to deal with certain situations. And this is very important because people think, why can't the rabbis just? Well, I mean, that's a wonderful question, but one has absolutely no knowledge of the tonnage of information that they're lacking in asking that question. It's important to understand that. We do this all the time. And I'm going to say this, on behalf of the rabbi, so you'll forgive me, but, this is an issue. Because we're very free to do this with scholars, not as free to do it with doctors and lawyers, although we do it with them as well, right? But there's a certain level of professionalism that we don't expect, or a certain level of scholarship that we don't expect. I mean, I hear people say all the time, why can't they just take away the second day of Yom Tov? I don't understand. Right? No, that's correct, you don't understand. That's right. And that's important, to understand that you don't understand. As a matter of fact, it's so massive what one does not understand by asking that question that it is, I'm serious, like the tonnage of information and context that a person is lacking in asking that question is so shocking that one doesn't even know how to begin to answer the question. You literally have to sit down and give a shiur to answer that question. Well, they don't in Israel. Yeah, I know. Because it's Israel. And this isn't. Yeah, it's just an example that I get I get that question all the time. Yeah. But it's important to understand that there is a massive range in being able to recognize, okay, am I ready to do these tricks on the bike or not? Am I ready to actually now respond otherwise to a particular situation that is not necessarily written in the book or in the letter of the law. Well, you've got to be a Chacham first. And then you've got to be a Hasid, and then you can deal with it. Otherwise, wanting to deal with it, feeling that it needs to be, is very, very nice. But more often than not, people just mess up because they just don't have the goods to be able to deal with it the way people need to deal with it. And that's the reality, right? That's the reality. Now, I mean, who is it that has the goods and doesn't have the goods? That's a different question. You know, you got to test them on the bike, you know, see how it is that it goes. But at the end of the day, that's a reality. And that's what a Hasid, right? So we looked at the Hasid. I'm not going into all the details now. It's all in Shir. You can all listen to Shir, right? It's over there. Finally, after defining all of these terms, going through all of these details of situation and what situations look like and how they manifest and what works, the Rambam says, we are commanded to live our lives in equilibrium. And why are we commanded? Because we're commanded to be like God. God doesn't lose control. Okay, well, that's God. Now, what do we mean by that? God doesn't run a world that is insensitive to the creations. God doesn't run the world in His terms, meaning He's not putting His force out into a world. He's restricting His force considerably in order for us to be able to even have a life, to be able to even be. He needs to restrict His force considerably and engage in the world as necessary for those creations. And that's what we're supposed to do. And we're supposed to see our attributes in terms of how it is that He deals with His attributes. And we look at the Navi, and we look at the Talmud, and we look at so on and so forth, and the world, to be able to see how it is that this happens. And so he says in Hey 3, which is really a new paragraph, which is connected to the next paragraph, which is connected to Vav, the Rambam's paragraph begins with Umitzuvin Anu and ends with Kifi Kocho. That's the appropriate paragraph. He says, we are commanded to walk in these middle ways. They are good and straight. This is the commandment, v'halachta bidrachav, to walk like God walks, so to speak. The paragraph begins with Umitzuvin Anu, which is Hey 3, yeah, and ends at the end of Vav, Kefi Kocho. That's a one paragraph. And he says, this is the way the Hachamim understood this. Just as God is gracious, he doesn't say He is gracious, says He's called gracious, so to you be gracious. Just as He is called merciful, you be merciful. And we spoke last week why we said that. Why is it He called and I be? I'm not going into that now. Yeah? But that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the way that God acts in a world. I'm looking to see the mercies of God in the world and that I should mimic them. I'm looking to see the grace of God in the world and that I should mimic it. I'm looking to see the sanctity of God in the world and that I should mimic it. It was here that we pointed out that he leaves something out, right? That the Sifre that he's quoting includes, and that is just as he is a Hasid, you be a Hasid. And it's here that I think I lost half the room, right? I'm not going to go through it again. I'm not going to go through it again because it's not essential to understanding the Perek. Yeah? Listen to the class again. And if you listen to the class again, and by the way, all of the classes of the first Perek will be up at the SMP website tomorrow morning. Right? So I'm going to post, I waited. I'm going to post the whole series up at once tomorrow morning. And so you can review the classes if you want on the SMP website. So here he tells us the mitzvah. And the mitzvah is simply v'halachta bidrachav. We have to do this. Does he tell us how? For the first time. For the first time he begins to tell us how. And what he says is, you need to habituate. Because once you do it again and again and again, you practice and get on that bike and get on that bike and get on that bike and ride and ride and ride and ride, it'll become easier and easier and easier to control your attributes. Do it once, twice, three times, do it again, check yourself, evaluate yourself, think about how you're doing, do it again and again and again and again. It's just saying, create the neural pathways. That's what he's saying. teach your brain what it's supposed to be doing. How do you do that? You keep doing it over and over again. You create the neural pathways. That's what he's saying. So that it becomes easy, kalima alav. They're easy, they're light for you, they're not heavy on you, they're not weighing you down. Why aren't they weighing you down? Because you're not in the extremes anymore. That's why. Because you're there. That's why. You, the meta-self, the self that's realizing that you're getting angry, and the realizing that you're not doing this right. It's that overarching self that we spoke about, that's aware of yourself. And you end up giving strength and power to that overarching self instead of enslaving that overarching self to whatever attributes are dragging it through the mud. That's the point. How do you do that? You practice. Literally, that's what he's saying. Practice. Practice makes perfect. That's literally what he's saying. But we don't practice. We don't even think about often what we're doing and how we're doing it. He's saying we have to. We have to pay attention to how we act and the way that we respond to things, and we have to practice. So when I feel like I want to get angry, I try to pull back. I didn't make it that time, I'm going to try it the next time. I feel like I'm getting angry, I'm going to pull back. The more one does that, and I'm talking about regular situations here, you'll see, right? The more one, I'm not talking about anger management problems. I'm not talking about a situation where a person has real anger issues. We'll see in a minute. I'm talking about an average individual. You feel like getting angry, pull back. Bite a pillow. Scream into a pillow. Do something. Don't pull back. And little by little, your brain doesn't find it so difficult. There are things, so you know what you're thinking about when I'm saying this? You're thinking about your vices. Don't. That's next chapter. What we're talking about here are just finding appropriate behaviors that you're not dying under. Those are the things that we don't spend time doing. We just act. And we respond to situations as we immediately feel like we should. We don't need to do that. Nor should we do that. As a matter of fact, and this is what I want you to get from this shiur, we are commanded not to do that. It's a mitzvah in the Torah like any other mitzvah in the Torah. The same way that you are commanded to say kiddush on Shabbat, the same way that a man is commanded to put on tefillin, the same way that we're commanded to do any of the positive mitzvot that the Torah requires us, this is a Torah commandment, not a rabbinic one. Not that we don't have to keep the rabbinic one. Of course we have to keep them. But this is a Torah commandment. One of the 613. And a person who doesn't keep this commandment has problems with their being from. I'm serious about this. In the same way that a person who does not say Kiddush on Shabbat, it's a little bit different because we look at Kiddush on Shabbat as a person's faithfulness to the whole Torah. There's a reason for that. But a person who does not do these positive commandments, they didn't hear the Megillah, which is rabbinic. Rabbinic, right? It's a major rabbinic one. They don't listen to me. They don't eat matzah on Pesach night. They don't tell the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. You wouldn't say that person was from, would you? I mean, I don't know, maybe you would. I don't know. The person keeps Shabbat, so they don't do this. They don't do this. Or a person doesn't put on tefillin, right? Every now and then. If a Chabad rabbi finds them in the street and so on, they're feeling particularly Jewish at that moment, they put on tefillin. This is the same. This is transgressing a mitzvah in the Torah. All of a sudden we shifted from this is the way human beings are, these are the situations, this is what it means to live a nice way, and so on and so forth. All of a sudden the Rambam just dropped a major point over here and said, and by the way, we are commanded to pay attention to this and do this. We are not allowed in our lives to simply respond to situations as I feel like. Not allowed. It's not permitted to do that. We are required to aim our attributes and selves to respond to situations as necessary. And if we're not there yet, we're required to live and act in whatever way we need to get ourselves there. That's the truth. That's what he says right here. That's the halakha. And it's not just the Rambam. Nobody disagrees with this. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. There may be slight variations of definition, but there's no question. I mean, this is in the Gemara. Chachamim see it this way. That's what I want everyone to get from this year. It's a mitzvah. And I don't mean like it's a mitzvah, it's a nice thing to do. It's a mitzvah. We're transgressing. This Kippur comes around, and this has to have teshuvah also. We looked at that last time. We looked at the seventh parak of Hilchot Teshuvah, where Arambam says you have to do teshuvah for attributes. Minyakol tzarich hashuv. We don't think about that on Kippur. We don't think about on Kippur, I lost my temper with my kids. Who stands on Kippur? I mean, maybe they do, but you know, it's not the prevalent thing. Certainly not what we're focused, what we are as a people focused to think on Yom Kippur. But we need to. It's included. Just as much as I miss Shabbat, and I miss Shofar, and I miss this, I miss this. I missed it. I lost my temper with my kids. I lost my temper with my wife. I spoke out of turn. I asserted myself at a meeting when I shouldn't have. Arrogance. Wasn't my place. I had an ice cream cone that I just shouldn't have had. No, I'm not kidding about that. I'm not making a joke about. Because that has to do with tava. It's not that there's a problem to have an ice cream cone, but where's it coming from? I know, it's not comfortable to think about this, but we need to. Why do I want it? Do you know how long it's taken humanity to start thinking about why I eat? The Torah has been talking about this for 3,000 years. Why are you having that ice cream cone? What's the real reason you're eating that ice cream cone? Do you know how long it's taken human beings to catch up? To start thinking about, well, maybe I'm not eating because I'm hungry. Maybe I'm not eating because I feel like having ice cream. Yeah, why do you feel like having ice cream? That is a question that we are required to ask. And at the end of the day, we're going to find. This is just a foreshadowing. We're going to end shiur now. At the end of the day, we're required to ask. Am I allowed to be unhealthy? Not, is it good or bad to be unhealthy? I'm talking about this in terms of Torah law. Am I allowed to not go to the doctor? Nobody asked what you feel like. I'm talking about from the perspective of Torah, from the perspective of Jewish law. Jewish law doesn't ask you if you feel like going to the doctor. That's none of your business. No, really, it's not up to you. You don't want to be a God-fearing religious Jew. That's another question. But if you want to be a God-fearing religious Jew, you don't have an option not to go to the doctor. That's not up to you. And if you don't go to the doctor, when you have to go to the doctor, it's a transgression and you have to deal with it on Yom Kippur. I'm not exaggerating over here, not one bit. That's the truth. You can see the whole chapter 4. It's all just health. Chapter 4, it's all in there. The next question that we have to deal with is what happens when there are individuals that are very extreme and stuck in particular attributes. We would call them sick. People that are either on the border or on the verge of addiction. People that really have serious anger management problems. People that are really stuck under the rock of this particular attribute. Those are special cases. It's not enough just to start habituating. It's not enough just to practice. What Rambam says over here in Kitzad Yargil Adam, right? How do you get this? How do you do this? You just keep doing it over and over again and get used to it? That doesn't work for that person. And the Rambam is going to address that in the second perek. Stay tuned. Rabbi Hanania ben Akashia Shalom, Rasakadosh Barakuzakoi, Srafika Herbaran, Duan Kosh, Nemar, and I have his man's coin, Gil Torah.